This is Money Moves on VSiN, the sports betting network.
To Money Moves, downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort Casino, home of the world's largest sports book. Stormy Bonantoni and Jonathan Von Tobel with you. Still so much more to come this hour. We'll hit on plenty of Major League Baseball, have a 15-game card coming up today, a couple national WNBA games as well. We got some news in college football a moment ago we'll touch on in a bit, and having a little bit of fun with some NFL head-to-head win totals. That's coming up in just a little bit, but JBT, we start this hour like we have been for the last couple of weeks in the National Football League with our NFL training camp tour.
Join Stormy and JVT as they go on the Money Moves NFL training camp tour.
Where are we at? Where are we at? Where's the car going today, JVT?
Minnesota.
Your lack of enthusiasm kills me. Yes! The Minnesota Vikings. We are slowly but surely inching our way. Well, yeah, and it's deceiving too on the map because we kind of started a little bit more south, then went all the way south, and now we're coming all the way north.
So you're criticizing Justin for the way that he's planned this trip, but I think Justin's done a tremendous job as our navigator.
This was the best strategy to get us to start on the East Coast and end, of course, in Los Angeles at SoFi Stadium, where the Super Bowl is going to be this year, and also coincidentally happens to be your Super Bowl favorites in the LA Rams. But today is the day that we talk Purple People Eaters, and we talk about the Minnesota Vikings and everything going on there. Obviously, last year they missed the postseason altogether, that coming off of that 14-3 season where they make the run. They then have to go on and watch Sam Darnold win a Super Bowl after letting him walk, and instead got the J.J. McCarthy experience. Had three different quarterback start games for them last year, hoping it's a different story this season with Kyler Murray ultimately being named the starting quarterback last week. Are you a believer that he can change the fate offensively of this team?
I mean, maybe. I think that Kyler Murray, I can understand the upside. I can understand why people would be bullish on it, considering that Murray is talented, and we have seen it. And generally, even in his time in Arizona, it actually does kind of smack of Baker Mayfield to an extent. Like, you look at the seasons, right? 7.1 yards per attempt, 68.8% completion, 21 touchdowns, 11 interceptions. That's his last full season, right, in 2024. That's not terrible. Turnover-worthy play rate of 2.4%. You go down the list, and you see a bunch of seasons where he's flirting with 4,000 yards, has a positive touchdown-interception ratio, has a relatively high completion percentage, and you see that and you can go, yeah, I think I can do something with that. So I think that your bullishness on Minnesota, if you have it, I think is tied to that. And I think there's a reason why he probably won the job. It's funny, I saw a lot of folks really almost outright say that he won the job because he was chosen by Justin Jefferson and not because of his performance. And I don't think a franchise would do that. I don't think they would willingly put the worst quarterback option out there to make one player happy. I think he won the job because there's still questions about what J.J. McCarthy is. At the end of the day, this is all going to be, I think, all going to be about this position. Mm-hmm. Whatever you think is going to happen with Minnesota Vikings is going to depend on whatever happens at quarterback. And I think this is going to be one of the more simple teams that we preview. If Kyler Murray's good, then this team's going to be good. And if Kyler Murray's bad and they're playing musical chairs at quarterback and they can't figure it out, then they're going to be bad. And I think it's really as simple as that.
So I'm in agreement with you. And obviously the quarterback play last year was brutal. McCarthy and his 10 starts, worst completion percentage and touchdown to interception ratio in the league. Total QBR ranked 27th of a possible 33 quarterbacks qualified. Overall on the season, regardless of who was under center, they had the worst third down offense in the league and turned the ball over 30 times, which was also the worst in the NFL. So you at least have this feeling on the surface, no matter what, there's got to be a better output from the position. Now, the offensive line injuries and everything they went through last year didn't help the situation, so you're obviously hoping up front that they're going to be better there too. But here's my issue with Kyler Murray. And when we teased this segment earlier in the show, I said I had some damning stats that lead me to believe that I'm going to struggle to get on board with the Kyler Murray experience because of the history of the second half decline that he's had year in and year out, whether it be to just being worn down or injuries or whatever it is for him. But it is pretty stark to see weeks 1-9 in his career. He's 27-17-1 just from a win-loss standpoint compared to 14-31 weeks 8 weeks 10 to 18. Mm-hmm. So again, 14 and 31, the win-loss record from weeks 10 to 18. His individual numbers drop off a cliff as well. Weeks 1 through 9, career average in the 69 to 71% completions, 260 pass yards per game, uses his legs a lot more, stretches the defense, does all that stuff. Back half of the season, the yards per attempt drop below 7, the completion percentage drops sub 64%, which still is like not bad, but it's a significant drop off from what he was doing. The rushing production drops by nearly 30% and the pick rate tips up. So all of these things, and that's a consistent year over year production issue for Kyler Murray, where he goes from a guy that we talk about as a potential MVP candidate, the way that he shows up early in the season, and then it goes away.
How much of the pie are you going to serve of fault there to Kyler Murray versus the coaching staffs and offenses that he's been a part of? Because it's all, there's so much noise in how much a quarterback's production, right? Because those are all, there's clearly,
it's team stats mixed in with it.
And I'll invoke, like when we talked about the SEC, right? There's a clear line of demarcation of falling off with Kyler Murray's stats, like we talked about with our boy Mateer and the hand injury. But you can still have questions as to what is the catalyst behind those. I think those are fine, because the reason why I ask is, if you're somebody who believes that Kevin O'Connell is what everybody expects that he is, there's a reality in which that second half drop off doesn't happen because he's under better tutelage with a better offense.
I don't know if his body will hold up. Sure. And I think that's a layer of it as well. I mean,
I don't necessarily disagree with you. I think that's the argument you make, though, right?
Yeah. Two of the last three seasons, he hasn't played half the games. Mm-hmm. And so, like, that's not even just putting the production into account. That's just him not being available. So I just find it hard, based on what I have seen with my eyes throughout the course of his career, to think that we're going to have a full season of Kyler Murray and this offense working. What he does have, fortunate for him, right, is that there are great weapons at his disposal. Mm-hmm. You've got a better defense than you've probably ever had that's on the other side of this thing, which should continue to be good after they were a top five unit in just about everything, it feels like, last year. So I understand the reasons for optimism. I just don't know if I personally want to get invested.
I'm just surprised you would dare question Kevin O'Connell and his ability to rear quarterbacks.
Legend, quarterback whisperer.
I
see that the same way that you do.
Yeah, there's been a lot of people who think that Kevin O'Connell can breathe on somebody and they become a great quarterback, and they want to, you know, give him credit for Daniel Jones being on the practice squad for a month and a half, or also Sam Darnold continuing to be great when he was out there at Seattle. I think at the end of the day, here's the thing. So when you're looking at this, I think they're pretty accurately priced. Like 8.5 seems about fair. As we were doing it yesterday, and I don't know how much you watch of the Green Bay stuff, but the more I watch, the more I dove into Green Bay, the more I kind of understand the thought process of, yeah, maybe they finish like fourth in this division. Maybe they are like the worst team in the NFC North because of everything they're going through. And maybe that buoys the Vikings up to get to like 9 wins and to finish above Green Bay. And maybe that's something worth playing, because a team like the Green Bay Packers is worse. A team like the Bears could be worse. We talked about them while you were gone as well.
The turnover luck they had isn't sustainable. 100%.
I don't know where their pass rush is coming from, things like that. The injury to safety as well. So there's a reality in which maybe the Vikings are better, but also they get lifted by the fact that two teams in front of them right now and the betting odds are actually going to be worse, and they can find themselves maybe even second in this division, but still finish like 8 or 9 wins.
Maybe that's part of the reason that Nick Whalen is as high on this team as he is, because for all of the negativity that at least I feel toward what the success for the offense can be this year, Nick Whalen is buying in several ways.
I grow my cartoonish Minnesota Vikings futures portfolio, Brandon. Is the over 2.5 division wins for Minnesota at -110. I think they could split with all three teams in the NFC North. I think all these teams could go 3-3 in division. I think it's a lot closer than the odds might imply. And this is a team that went 4-2 in division a year ago. And that was with McCarthy. That was with Wentz. That was with Max Brosmer quarterbacking this team. You know, I am high on Kyler Murray coming in and just bringing a much, much higher floor to that offense. Keep in mind, Brandon, this Minnesota Vikings team beat the Lions on Christmas Day with Max Brosmer throwing for 51 yards and taking 7 sacks. That was a double-digit win for the Minnesota Vikings. Give me some competent quarterback play this year. I think this Vikings team could be a 4-win team in the NFC North.
Well, and it sounds like his overarching thought is similar to yours. If Kyler Murray is better at quarterback, this team is going to have more success. Yep. If there is one bet to make, at least for me personally, from a positive standpoint in Minnesota, it's Justin Jefferson's receiving yards for the season. His over-under for the year is 1,149.5, -110 each way. If you want to do some of those alts to play it up, you can certainly. But looking through the numbers, two of the last 3 years, he's gone under this, right? And it's because of the rotation we've seen at quarterback. In 2023, Kirk Cousins had the injuries. They had four different starting quarterbacks that year. Last year, three different starting quarterbacks, career low 62 yards per game, still had 1,000-yard seasons both of those years. Mm-hmm. So if you are correct, and we do see the competent quarterback play, and the reports are all true of the chemistry that we've seen from Kyler Murray and Justin Jefferson, is he not soaring over this number? I mean, the four other years he's been in the league all had 1,400 plus, averaging nearly 1,590 yards over those four seasons where he had consistent quarterback play.
I mean, I brought this up a couple of times, but to add to that, wouldn't you also add some offensive player of the year?
Sure.
He's 14 to 1, somewhere in that range. Like, if he's going to go over those numbers, he's going to be one of the better receivers. He's performed well. So if he gets, again, to use the word, competent quarterback play with this offense, and what if they are, like, the upside here? Like, that's going to be something that's going to be, I think, worth looking at. So I think I would agree with you, but also he's been, like, the awards market for this team. It would be offensive player of the year.
Also, if you have interest in maybe most receiving yards, I'm not sure I would go that far, but 12 to 1 for that as well. Sixth on the board. I mean, last year, too, commanded 30.1% target share, had the ball coming his way 141 times. He's going to get fed this season. So.
Well, and Murray in his time, I keep bringing up the DeAndre Hopkins target.
He likes having his guy.
It's a high rate of targets to a top receiver.
Yep. He's going to eat. Also, while we're talking all things NFL, NFL futures, reminder, the NFL futures draft is coming up this Thursday. VSiN's on the clock. Second year in a row that we're putting this together. 13 different hosts and guests facing off in a fantasy football style snake draft hosted by our buddy Dustin Sweetelson. Every pick doubles as a handicapping breakdown as well that you can use and put toward your own futures portfolio. Win totals, division winners, player props, different stat leaders, last year's competitors all back for round two. And we've got three newbies this year, including former NFL wide receiver Keyshawn Johnson, comedian and sports commentator Nick Buckeye, and the guru John Hansen. Don't just watch the futures draft. You can profit from it. Tune in Thursday, August 20th, 5 Eastern, only right here on VSiN, the sports betting network. And we will be back, of course, when we return. Plenty of Major League Baseball to get into. And we got some breaking news for a quarterback officially named for this college football program. Stick around.
So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match. Here's the thing. Pro bettors spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. VSiN Pro gives you access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Football season is almost here and the sharp money is on the move. Here's how the sharp play sees it first. Exclusive data feeds from four major sports books, thousands of sharp bettors and professional syndicates tracked in real time before the market moves, and all of it's filtered and sorted by version 6.0 of their AI model. That's the machine. Now the receipts, every play is logged, every result made public, records dating back to 2011 and live logged since 2021. It all feeds a live performance terminal that you can check out anytime without a login necessary, no paywall either, no steam chasing, no stale trends. Check them out today at sharpplays.com. That's sharpplays.com. And we do have some NFL news coming through. Of course, we are each and every day as training camp practices continue, joint practices as well as ahead of some of these week two preseason games from 49ers camp this morning. Mike Evans, I guess, left practice early again. Not a great sign. His left quad got wrapped up in ice. Kyle Shanahan did give an update on Christian McCaffrey, though, who we know has missed some time with muscle tightness, said he would have practiced today if it weren't a joint practice. So that's good. And I mean, I know that there were some rumors recently about his absences actually potentially being contract related after we saw Jahmyr Gibbs and Bijan Robinson get their new deals. We've seen several reports since kind of debunking that, saying, no, the muscle tightness thing is real, but there aren't any long-term concerns with McCaffrey. I don't know if I believe that to be true. And it's easy to say, hey, he would have, should have, could have practiced today if it wasn't a joint practice.
I know all about muscle tightness, brother.
Yeah, how are those shoulders today?
Shoulders are fine. Now, my chesticles feeling a little sore, feeling a little tight. Yes, it was pushed.
I'm glad though. So we were talking about this a little bit earlier off the air. I questioned you when you were talking about doing chest workouts because you recently told me that the elbow tendonitis had been flaring up. Yep. The tricks of the trade that Jensen Lewis had given you as a former pitcher weren't necessarily working. Now they are working. I understand.
They are. They have worked. I have a brace for the tendonitis as well that I wear every single time. Also, just having pure alpha male hormones flowing through my body and pushing through the pain constantly and not being a total pansy about it also helps too.
You're a ridiculous person. You're going to hurt yourself with that mentality, by the way. You're just a rub some dirt on it guy, even though you're not like doing anything for competition or for money. It's just,
it's all for pride. So I can look at that guy in the mirror and tell him that he did his best.
Let's get into a little other news. We got some in college football moments ago. Pete Thamel of ESPN, their college football insider, said North Carolina has named their starting quarterback entering that early season game in Dublin against TCU. Billy Edwards will ultimately be the guy to start things out week one. Why are you laughing?
Well, I'm laughing because Adam Burke was just with us, and you know, you never really know. Like, for example, for those who don't know, right, Stormy has really a very quiet passion about Legos. She really enjoys building Lego sets. She's got a ton around her house. It's really an uncovered passion that we don't really discover or know about because we don't talk about it on the air. I didn't know that Adam Burke had this passion for ACC football because we mentioned Billy Edwards, and he was like ranting.
He was riled up.
I'm not lying. Yeah. He just started ranting about Billy Edwards being named the starting quarterback for North Carolina. And I was like, man, I did not know you held these opinions so strongly, Adam. This would have been good to cover with you while we were on the air. He was genuinely fired up. Meanwhile, like I saw the news. I was like, yeah, that makes sense.
Sure.
he's worked under Petrino, right?
Yeah,
he's got experience, whatever it is. And so I think the whole point here being is Adam was talking about how he wanted to play against them. We've done a lot of week zero stuff in the days that you weren't here. We talked a little bit about it. So I'd like to hear your thoughts on some of these games. But my whole premise has been like, I'm going to bet North Carolina against TCU in this game. I just know I'm going to get 7.5. I'm just curious if I get to 8, will I get to 8.5, whatever it is. Edwards' presence as a starting quarterback has done nothing to the line. We're still sitting at 7.5. But I don't know if it's that big of a deal. And I think I don't want us to forget that North Carolina defensively last year had turned out to be a pretty good group. And down the stretch, they were covering some numbers. Were you on the Cal North Carolina game? Or we were just talking about that because like that was a very tightly contested game against our guy, Jaron Keves, Sangapulatele, and the fact that the Golden Bears, you know, had to fight for that one. And there's a lot of those on North Carolina's resume down the stretch last year. And I think they're just going to be a little bit more competent. And I don't want all of the nonsense around this team to mask what statistically was top 30 defense in a lot of different categories last year. And thus, I think they can stay inside of this number with, to use the term we talked about for our guy Murray, competent quarterback play. And you might just get that here.
Yeah, he beat out Miles O'Neill for the job. He's like a talented, big dude, 6'5". So the thing with Edwards, and I will, full disclosure, I know we've talked about this a lot together. I don't do a ton of Big Ten. And he is, like, started his career at Maryland, Wisconsin, now going to North Carolina into the ACC. And last year, specifically, his time at Wisconsin, he only played in like 2 games because he got injured with a non-contact injury early. So is he very experienced? Yes. Is he any good? Eh. Is this I would say a very mid quarterback, but if he can give you enough, then to your point, yeah, if they're going to be more competent, you would imagine across the board, they're a team that improved down the stretch. We feel like defensively having Bill Belichick as your head coach, you're going to be a little bit more effective on that side of the ball as well to help you out offensively. There are reasons to like getting more than a touchdown in a game that I honestly lean under to begin with on that total. I think it's a little bit high for what UNC's defense is and the offensive capabilities of both of these teams entering this year. I could see it being a closer, lower scoring type of a game than at least the odds indicate right now. But I didn't watch a lot of Billy Edwards football over the last few years, all that to say.
Yeah. To me, it's just more of like as odd as it sounds, a blind trust in Belichick, he can still coach defense. We have a lot of evidence to that point.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, the defense should, like, they'll be fine, you would imagine.
And by the way, do we know TCU starting quarterback who comes from Harvard is going to be great? Like, no. I just don't know if that's going to be the case.
Hated Josh Hoover so much, I just thought anything would be an upgrade to you.
It's very true. I do hate him very much. I've called him the worst quarterback amongst every single starting quarterback in the country, and that includes the high school quarterbacks that we're going to go watch this weekend on Friday between St. John Bosco and Bishop Gorman. But I would say that out of all of this, I just think that 7.5, good defense, And yeah. the weird setting of going to freaking Ireland to play game, like, I find it odd that we're getting the 7 in the hook, so let's do it.
Okay, that is a good note, though. Let's make sure that we do talk more week zero. Obviously, next week
right
will be the grand plan. No, because we got some baseball to cover as well today. 15-game slate. Mm. We already talked through some with Adam Burke a little bit earlier in the program.
Stanford's up to 6. It's crazy.
You just love Hawaii so much with like every ounce of your being.
Yeah, I'm getting distracted.
You are. Major League Baseball today, 15-game card. No day baseball today, unfortunately. If you do want to hear the breakdowns, by the way, from Adam Burke earlier in the program, you can always download Money Moves in podcast form. Listen on your own time whenever you want. But any games stood out to you largely today?
Yes, indeed. Let's go. I'm going to be selfish for a second.
Do it.
A magnificent pitching matchup for the Angels and the Astros later today. But in all seriousness, George Klaassen is going to be out there for the Angels. Klaassen, young guy. He's made four starts so far this year. And the first three have all kind of had a similar theme, Stormy, in that the command has been an issue. 4 strikeouts, 5 walks against Seattle. 2 strikeouts, 5 walks against Cincinnati. 3 strikeouts, 4 walks against Miami. You sense the theme here, right? More walks than strikeouts. Has been kind of working through some stuff. And he's got some, I think, some good stuff. 96-mile-an-hour fastballs, like things you like for a young pitcher. Surface numbers aren't really great. 5.52 ERA, 6.22 fielding independent. However, we saw Klaassen kind of turn things around against Texas in his last start. Gave him 6 innings. Scattered 5 hits, gave up 2 earned runs, but the more important part, Storm, 5 strikeouts to 1 walk. He really kind of whittled in on the command, looked a little bit more in control of what he wanted to do. And so you do wonder if this is a turning of the leaf here for Klaassen, and if maybe he's going to start to be a little bit more confident and competent, to use that term one more time, as he gets some of these starts to end the year. And on the other side, you get Javier, who's getting the start for the Astros. On the surface, the 6.68 ERA. Not very good, obviously. 5.62 expected numbers, like all of that has been somewhat of a nightmare. Had a stretch where he had performed relatively well when he came back at the beginning of July. Remember, he missed some time at the end of April, came back on the 4th of July, had 5 straight starts where he's been pitching pretty adequately, but he's been pretty average over his last 2 starts. 11 innings pitched, 7 earned runs, struck out 4 and walked 1 over those 2 outings. So you do wonder if maybe the Angels, who offensively do still have a little bit left in the tank with Klaassen performing a little bit more adequately, if there's maybe a little bit of value and a price on the Angels to potentially get it done with Klaassen here today. So we saw this open on the overnight between these two here at Circa. Initially, Houston opened up as a $1.70 favorite. We're down to a $1.58, and I would agree with that. I think that Klaassen, with what he showed in his last start, what we've seen from Javier, and what we've seen from the Angels lineup, that I think you can probably say that at +147, +150, there was a little bit more there for the Angels. So.
Well, one more quickly, last 60 seconds, Diamondbacks and Red Sox. Your Red Sox came back down to earth a little bit over the last week.
Bounced back yesterday.
3-7 last 10, yes. Beat up on Arizona yesterday, 11-1. They're favored to go back-to-back today with Ranger Suarez on the hill, -158 home favorites. Merrill Kelly going for Arizona.
Hey, all I know is that I just need them to make the playoffs, and then they can stop being my Red Sox. So they go ahead and do whatever they want.
Do you hate hearing that every day? Because the Angels are so bad, you don't get to say, like, my Angels with a good feel anymore?
No, I don't. Where was I the other day? Somebody had mentioned, I was doing a hit for local news, and the news producer was an Angels fan, and one of the on-air hosts was like, ugh, the Angels, like, who can imagine being a fan? And none of them knew that I was an Angels fan, so just sat there and was like, yeah, that's quite the existence. No, I would just say this. Last time out for Suarez, and we know what he is. He's been pretty consistent and really pitched very well. I think that you're going to trust that the D-backs with Merrill Kelly out there will put up a good fight, but Kelly has not been pitching well at all.
+147 if you do like the dog in that spot, but Boston now 6-game cushion ahead of that third spot for the wild card, so they are at least feeling pretty good with what they've done. That run differential should have you feeling pretty good as well. You hear that music? We're going to take a quick timeout here on Money Moves. When we return, a handful of interesting NFL head-to-head win totals to dive into.
Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back here on Money Moves, Stormy Bonantoni, Jonathan Von Tobel with you. It's fun this time of year as we get closer to the NFL season really being here, just to tinker through how many markets there really are for the NFL. From a future standpoint, if you go through some of these DraftKings markets, there are things that I didn't even know that we still had. One of which we're actually going to discuss here, some of these head-to-head win totals. I knew that there were certain teams that you could do it on, but you on DraftKings can go through and like pick a team that you're interested in, every single one, and just go through and see if you want to, if there is a number that makes sense to you to have more wins than another team.
Yeah.
And there, go ahead.
I was going to say, so you want one for you, by the
sure,
way?
Yeah.
So I think there's an interesting couple of these more wins than market. I was on with our buddies on the Sports Gambling Podcast when they did their Indianapolis Colts preview. And I threw out, if you were somewhere with DraftKings, if you wanted to find something unique to play, there's a lot of different ones, but the Raiders to have more wins than the Indianapolis Colts is, I think, a pretty interesting one. It's in the range of like 230 when I was looking at it. I'll get the exact number for you here.
That's kind of fun because that's a team that you're optimistic about versus a team that you are not.
Right. Yeah, plus 265. But yeah, there's a lot, dude. You can go around if you feel like you have an edge one way or the other. If your win totals don't match up with what you're looking at, like there's so many different angles that you can look at. If you're higher or lower on one team than another, you know, I think the Packers would be a good one, too. Mm-hmm. The Packers are a team that I think a lot of people are very high on for relatively good reasons. Or I just think generally that they're going to be a pretty adequate group. But as we spelled out yesterday, I think there's a lot of cases we made that they're going to be a little down this year. So finding some instances in which you can find some teams that maybe they're not going to have as many wins as that are comparably priced, you could do that too.
And that's where it behooves you if you do have a different opinion than the market or the masses to kind of put that to the test and see what the difference of the number is going to be and how good of a plus money price you can find.
Like the Vikings plus 190 to have more wins than the Green Bay Packers, right? Like as we talked about, I think there is a bigger chance than not that that is something that ends up happening. Even this, it's not as much juice for your squeeze here for an entire season, but New England to have more wins than the Green Bay Packers plus 105. If you're high on New Orleans, and these are two teams that are generally going to finish relatively close to each other, you're getting plus 255 on New Orleans to have more wins than the Green Bay Packers.
So how you can find this, by the way, in DraftKings Futures, the wins tab, where you can find any of those just standard over under win totals for the season. There is the more wins than tab associated next to that. That's where you can also find like final undefeated team, fewest wins, most wins, all those different markets. Another one is just specific matchups where you can get essentially like a win, lose, or draw bet, which team is going to have more wins than the other, or if they're going to have a tie. So the tie option is a part of it as well. But there are only three options, and they are specifically regarding a team with an NFL head coach who was like scorned from his last head coaching gig and is now in a new position. So that coach against his former team, Falcons, Browns, Cowboys, Steelers, Giants, Ravens, those examples. Let's start with Falcons, Browns. Obviously Kevin Stefanski gets the axe from Cleveland, but his Falcons are favored to have more wins than the Browns. Falcons minus 140 favorites, Cleveland plus 155, the tie price plus 850. And the difference of the actual season win totals for these teams, Falcons 7.5, you're getting plus money on the over there. Browns sitting 5.5 and it's minus 136 to the over. So better, worse tie for Atlanta.
I kind of want to play a tie in that I think there's a chance they could finish with a similar amount of wins. My love for Atlanta has waned in recent weeks, not because of the Tua Tagovailoa performance, if I could speak, but just getting like reading reports, talking to people from Atlanta. I got to tell you, yesterday, Justin, I think I want to fire you. Josh Kendall made me feel terrible about the Atlanta Falcons yesterday. I mean, he covers the Falcons. Yeah. It was just like, he's like, I don't know, man. Like, this looks,
then
I'm
you got
paraphrasing.
The James Pierce stuff yeah, thrown right. in there with what he's going to miss.
But I definitely think that some of the stuff that I have, you know, 250-1 to win MVP, things like that are probably going to fall to the wayside. But as you know, right, I don't think, am I the only person that has said a positive thing about the Cleveland Browns in this offseason at all? And even then, my positivity is just like, yeah, I think maybe they can get like 6 wins. You know, like I'm not really asking for too much. But if I'm right, the odds that they meet each other or have the same amount of wins are higher than what plus 850 would tell you. And the Browns to have more wins in general would have some value in it as well. If I'm right about, you know, is it positivity? I don't know what you call it with Cleveland. I don't think they're going to win the Super Bowl. I just don't think they're going to be this, like, you know, bottom of the barrel group that a lot of people
You're
think
like, they're going to be fine. Like, right. Whoa,
yeah,
hot take.
Right, yeah, exactly. I mean, look, Adam said it himself, sure. And I don't think you would disagree with it either. The roster is good. The roster is good. And what if, here, I'll put it this way. What if Deshaun Watson is Kyler Murray in the sense of 20 touchdowns, 10 interceptions, and like a pretty solid completion percentage? Like, not that much. That's not crazy. That's a pretty average quarterback season. Like, it's more above average than below. But if, again, I keep saying, if you just get like okay quarterback play, then you're looking at a team that I think can win those 6 or 7 games.
I understand what you're saying, and I would happily eat crow on this. I just have no belief in their offense. I really don't.
Can you buy crow meat?
I hope not. The one thing that would be another like factor of support for you is going to be the Browns schedule, obviously, as well. Sixth easiest based on opponent win total compared to Atlanta, who's 19th for this one. So that plus 850 could be a little bit more attractive. I don't particularly like Atlanta either. But I think that the win total for Cleveland specifically at 5.5 is right. Like, I think they're a 5 or a 6 win team. That's why I took the alt under on the 6.5 and was willing to pay it, because I don't see them exceeding 6. There is nothing about the way that their offense operates that I have the optimism that you would need to want to buy in on them. Let's go to another one of these, though. The Steelers and Cowboys.
I found somebody who can get me crow meat.
Gross.
We'll cook it up.
I was telling you, we have a butcher that I go to that sells like exotic meats, but I don't think
would you quite literally, if I could get it,
I don't order the exotic meats. Okay. Just want to put that out there.
Procure it and prepare it properly.
No, I'm not eating. No,
would you quite literally eat crow if the Browns won? I'll even set the bar high if they win 9 games.
I don't want to eat. I don't even want the possibility of eating a crow. I just
you
don't want
to do it. We're just not doing it.
We're just get out of here. You don't even know how to prepare it properly.
Score it.
Stop. Back to be focused. Cowboys and Steelers. Justin said he'll smoke it and bring it in. He is a very talented barbecue master, by
Crow wings,
Mike McCarthy, after being replaced in Dallas by Brian Schottenheimer.
Oh, I love this one.
He takes the year away. Now 2026 in Pittsburgh. I hate you so much. He goes to Pittsburgh as the Mike Tomlin era is officially over after 19 years. We're done with
the talking
meat.
About the wins. Dallas Cowboys
you
minus 120.
Wings. Oh, I thought you said wings.
No, I said wings earlier, but I'm saying I'm down with this. I like this a lot. Okay. Cowboys minus 120 to have more wins than the Steelers here. This match.
I agree. Completely agree.
What?
I know.
But Aaron Rodgers is...
You're the worst!
A top 5 quarterback in the NFL.
Absolutely. I'm tired.
He's got one of the best touchdown to interception ratios you're ever going to see.
I am sick and tired of you putting this on me.
You said it.
Okay?
Those were your words.
I said,
those were your
according
words.
To some statistics, he wasn't as bad as you made him out to be. That's all I was saying.
You were like, look at this touchdown interception.
You're a ridiculous person.
I think the Cowboys were going to be better on defense. Just looking a lot more about this. Like, they've invested a ton. They go and get Gary. I know we haven't gone to the Cowboys yet in our training camp tour, but they trade for Gary. They invest in the draft. There's some high-end picks there. They're not going to be awful. And how good their offense is going to be, we just need you to creep back toward average, right? I need you to be closer to 16 than you are to 32, and I think you're going to be that. And I think that's enough to put them into the playoffs, potentially win the division. I don't have the high hopes for Pittsburgh. I think they're going to be floating around a 7-win team, and I think this Cowboys team can't win like 10 games. And so I feel pretty confident that $120, that feels like a pretty fair price to lay for Dallas in this matchup.
I actually think this is a completely bettable thing here at minus 120. The actual win totals for these teams, Cowboys 9.5, Steelers 8.5. And you're only getting plus 105 on the Cowboys over. And for a Steelers team that I already leaned under the 8.5 at minus 130 on, I feel like minus 120 is a very reasonable price for what this head-to-head is, for all of the reasons that you just laid out. Like, my big thing, I think about the Cowboys very similarly as I think about the Cincinnati Bengals. With the offense, we know with Dak Prescott and the weapons that they have on offense, they're going to be a high octane unit again. It's just the defense just can't be the literal worst anymore. And that's all you're really asking for. And I love the sweeping changes that they've made on that side of the ball, whether it be the coordinator and scheme change that they're trying to bring in here. You pay Quinn and Williams and Kenny Clark in the Parsons trade draft, as you mentioned, the pieces that they got in Caleb Downs, who I think is going to be an instant performer in this defense. Malachi Lawrence as well. You said Gary D. Winters as well from San Francisco. A lot of the additions they made should allow that to be a quick turnaround. Then of course they throw in somebody who can just be a good third down piece for you and Von Miller, and Jerry Jones saying that they're not necessarily done yet adding either, that they could still do something more substantive on that side of the ball. There's a lot of reason, I think, for optimism about Dallas. And JJ, when we were on together last week, John Jastrzemski said for him, like, it's the Cowboys in the division. And I like the Eagles in the division, but I don't love them. And I could see Dallas, if that defense is good, making a little bit of a run.
Yep. We're in agreement here. So and I don't think, like, I don't, again.
Real quickly. I'll ask you what I asked him. Whose defense is going to be better, theirs or Cincinnati's?
Oh, I think Cincinnati's.
Yeah.
Because Cincinnati invested in the sense.
I kind of think so, too.
Because they got what's the word I'm looking for? The established products, if you would. Like, they got veterans. They went and acquired them for the most part. The Cowboys investments, there's a lot of young guys there. Like, yes, Gary is a known commodity. That was the term I was looking for. Gary is known. He's a good defensive lineman. But there's a lot of young guys there that there is some more volatility. the Bengals went out and got some tried and true guys that you know are at least adequate at their positions.
Yeah. That's why I actually did invest in them. I haven't bet anything Dallas yet, but I do have several bets, obviously, on the Cincinnati Bengals at this point. And just hoping Joe Burrow stays healthy, because no matter how good the defense is or the improvements they make, it's all going to hinge on his health. We got to step aside here. We're hitting the Kansas City Chiefs tomorrow on our training camp tour, which will be fun. But we are already wrapping up this Tuesday of the program. After this, don't miss it.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Stormy Bonatoni is back from assignment, as I have said. It's Jonathan Von Tobel wrapping it up here on Money Moves. If you missed out on any part of the show, VSiN.com or wherever you get your podcasts, like, rate, review, subscribe, and get in on all the action.
Real quickly, you can use the on assignment when I'm actually on assignment during football season. It's an appropriate way to put it. But you said yesterday, I even heard you said on assignment on vacation in San Diego. That's not the same.
It's on assignment. That's what you do.
It's not the same.
You were assigned to have a good time and relax before a very busy time of the year.
Mission accomplished,
yeah,
I would say.
Good job. Good job.
I did get some work done, though.
The fourth time this year. Anyway, all right, so I got some news notes.
You got to work some better things into your contract, it sounds like.
Some bobbles as well that we have to hit on really quickly. First off, social media and whatnot, moneymoves at VSiN.com, at Storm Bonatoni, and at me, JVT. Billy checks in, says, in South Dakota, you can hunt crow in two seasons, spring and fall. Allegedly, it tastes quite good, but aesthetically unappetizing gray color. Dig in, Stormy, as he says. For those who are just joining us, I had tried to convince Stormy would she literally eat crow if I could procure it should the Cleveland Browns win 9 games. I set the bar very high. You still back down?
Well, I think it's – I will never use the word impossible because anything can happen. So that's why I say for something that's not impossible, I'm not just going to jump in and be like, yeah, I'll eat that. That sounds terrible. And you know I'm a very visual eater.
I would try it.
If it looks nasty, I'm staying away.
All right, a couple of things. Yeah, the aesthetics part, like, that has to be, I can understand that, right?
Well, like, especially, if it's not really, like, great. Since I've never eaten crow before, have you? Like, does it?
I'm never wrong.
Can you, is it still going to be, like, pink inside if it's undercooked?
Well, that's my question I was just about to ask, is, like, is it grayish when it's raw or is it grayish when it's cooked?
Which is,
like,
also more disgusting, right? If it's, like, dark gray in the uncooked meat. Not down for that either.
Not really loving that. Okay, a couple of things I wanted to hit you with. First off, how are you feeling? We're getting an update coming out of Albuquerque, New Mexico. And I got to tell you, it's not great. Yeah. Starting quarterback Jack Lane, not even close to returning. When he was asked whether or not our big guy, Jason Eck, whether or not he was close to returning, quote, not real close in terms of the timeline. So it does sound like potentially that you will be on a backup to start the year. Now, to make the argument for you.
Their schedule.
I wasn't going to say that. You can go there if you wanted to. But I was going to say that New Mexico's quarterback depth chart, and I wrote about this for the guide, is relatively solid, including an Oregon transfer in Phil Moga, who did perform relatively well in the scrimmage. He a former three-star that played for the Ducks. So we'll see if that's actually something here. But a little bit of a blow for a team that many believe is going to be winning this Mountain West Conference.
So here's my thought. If he's not ready week one out the chute, do you just hold him until week four? Because you face Central Michigan in your opener, the Mercyhurst Lakers in week two before you have to go to OU and face the Sooners. Mm-hmm. Do you just, like, wait and avoid him getting pummeled by that defense if he's coming back from injury and come back week four?
Who's to say he's their best option? What if he doesn't need to come back? I don't think you're all doom and gloom. Like, I think that the quarterback depth chart's not too bad, and I know I keep giving you crap for it just because you like this team a lot. Their odds have drifted out to 3-1 to win the Mountain West. If it continues ahead in that direction, I think there's a strong argument to be made is we're finally starting to see some injury stuff get factored into these numbers here. Like, look at Hawaii, for example. If this is updated, Hawaii's down to 7-1, right? Mm-hmm. They were 6. I got them at 650, and they've drifted out. They were as high as, like, what was it, like 425. Now they're back down, and we're starting to see New Mexico drift out to 3-1. Because I'll tell you this right now, even with the injury, given what I know about the quarterback position, it's not like I know much or I've seen them, I would say New Mexico still at this point has better odds to win the Mountain West than North Dakota State.
Yeah. I need to look at, and I'm slow to pulling it up right now, what the, if the CFP odds have drifted.
Oh yeah. What was the number initially that
you? It was 20-1 at BetMGM. And granted, it was shorter at some other books. Like, I think DraftKings had 13-1.
Sure. Well, as you look that up, I did have another bit of news in college football.
Okay.
Not great news for a team that I'm relatively high on in the SEC, although I haven't really hasn't manifested in a bet. I just think they're a little undervalued in the sense of both the narrative around them and what you're looking at. But Trevor Goosby, one of the top offensive linemen and top offensive tackle prospect in the 2027 NFL draft for Texas, has been diagnosed with a bone bruise in his left knee. He got that during Monday's practice. So we'll see what the timeline is. Did he or had an MRI Tuesday morning, which revealed that no timetable for his return. Still got some time for Texas, obviously, but are inching closer to the season. And what was one of the big issues for Texas last year? Offensive line play, protection of Arch Manning. It's never really good if there is going to be a top returnee along your offensive line dealing with an injury. Trevor Goosby is the one that we are talking about here dealing with that.
The New Mexico odds are actually shorter now on BetMGM. So maybe people listen to me beforehand. That's 16 to 1 now. So it's still significantly longer than you're looking at some other books where it's in the 10 to 1 to 13 to 1 range for New Mexico to make the CFP. Yep. But your point about Texas, how high are you on Texas at large this year?
I mean, I think they should be considered with Georgia, like the co-favorites to win the SEC. And I think the Arch Manning Heisman season is probably a slight bigger reality than maybe the odds are saying so. You know, if the offensive line's good, I think Arch looks like everything we expect Arch to be.
Sure.
But it's not like I'm running to the window from a price standpoint. Like, I don't think there's that big of an edge. I will continue to say, I know a lot of people keep pointing at how tough this schedule is, and on paper it is. They also don't leave. They leave the state of Texas one time from the start of the season to November 7th.
I think Arch is going to be really good.
I think so, too. And when you're not, when you're basically at home every week and the one time you have to leave, okay, you go to Tennessee and then the other time you're going to Dallas to play. Like, come on, man. Yeah. The schedule sets up pretty nicely. The level of opponent is tough. But like, what if I'm right that Ole Miss is kind of down and they're not really particularly great? Tennessee is going to be a tough one. I like that. You get Oklahoma in a neutral. That's going to be crazy. I don't know what to think about Florida, but like, it's not an insurmountable schedule, and it's not like everybody's catching up to me. But I will say, the more college football content I'm taking in, I feel a little less nervous about my thought of, like, you know, I don't think Texas A&M is going to be, like, that good. Well, and
you
that
did,
seems to be the thing.
You did specifically write up the SEC in our college football betting guide, so I feel like you're a little bit more in the know and deeper into it than most to, I guess, when you look at a schedule like that, have a more varied opinion than just if you're like, oh, man, that's going to be a tough game. That's going to be a tough game. You actually have a more nuanced opinion to it.
Like, Florida's interesting, man. Like, you know, like Florida, they might be good, but at the same time, you're bringing in Aaron Filo, a quarterback who, yes, has his offense coordinator from Georgia Tech, but he's wildly unknown at quarterback. We'll see what Ole Miss is. Mississippi State, I think, should be better this year, but you're talking about a head coach that has one SEC win in his 2 years at the helm. Arkansas should be a rollover. What if Texas A&M is, you know, flawed?
That Ryan Silverfield hire for Arkansas is so bizarre to me.
I mean, it's kind of like this pairing, you know? They didn't really have any other options, and so they were just like, just stick JVT
just said,
in
just
there.
Just go for it. Yeah, figure it out.
All right, week zero.
What about it? So, okay, here's the thing.
I need your thoughts.
So I'm going to do, I know you guys have discussed week zero a lot on the program in days that I'm out.
Can you guess the two bets that I have made for week zero?
Well, I already guessed wrong on one of them.
Correct.
Because I thought that it was going to be
Hawaii,
Stanford.
Maybe, it still might be. Maybe. If that gets to seven, dude, this thing's up to six in multiple spots.
That's what I thought. I don't know how that's not intriguing to you, considering how
intriguing.
High you are on.
Oh, it's intriguing.
The ye old Warriors. You already said that you, or maybe you haven't actually bet it, but you're thinking about it.
So we're waiting for the best number. I will be on North Carolina. Again, to reiterate for audience, I feel very confident I'm going to get 7.5 whenever I want. So I'm just going to sit back and wait until game day to see if I can get this thing up to like 8, 8.5. Just get the best out of it, right? Get the most juice out of the squeeze.
Is it the Memphis UNLV game?
Okay, that's one of them.
Okay.
I have two bets. Which side is it?
I'm assuming you're taking six.
6.5, yep. Took 6.5 with Memphis. I don't think that's going to get to seven. That's the logic there. I don't think it's going to. I find value in the number already, and I don't think it's going to get to seven. Watch me get burned on that. You know, it is interesting too, the like lick your finger, test the wind narrative about UNLV. A lot of people are like, oh my God, Jackson Arnold's in a quarterback battle with Alex Horton. Jackson Arnold's the starting quarterback for UNLV. I feel very confident in telling you that right now. But while that conversation, while all those people are like, you know, whispering, the number keeps going up in favor of UNLV. So there doesn't really seem to be, from a betting perspective, a lot of trepidation about the Rebels in week zero.
I'm curious. I don't think that it's the one. If I were to bet one, which I haven't yet, at least just at first glance going through these games, I would probably lay it with USC. That's the one that stands out to me. But I know you're very high on USC as well, but I don't know if that's where you're looking.
Come on down, the Gamecocks of Jacksonville State catching seven
How
against
random.
North Dakota State. It's not random.
Oh,
it's college football.
Okay. No. Yeah. Well, they're familiar foes.
Yeah, right. I'm telling you, dude, seven. I think it's reflected in these betting market odds for the Mountain West. I just think we're a little high on these Bison. So we're going to test our theory right out the gate with Jacksonville State.
Taking the 6.5. What do you think about just my early thought on laying 38.5 with USC? They pummel people early in the season.
I think it makes sense. And I the way I put it in the guide was like, you know, good old Ken's done a pretty good job at times. And that first year at San Jose State, Kenny Amatalolo squeezed Chardonnay out of a rock and they won 7 games. But the exodus of any little bit of talent that they have, it's gone. They're rebuilding the roster. I just don't really think they're going to be a good team at all. And USC, given how deep they are, they keep going back to this. They keep talking about, you know, we talked about the starting offensive line coming back from last year. They might not start the same starting five because they think they're that deep at the position. That's just how talented this roster is. They could stumble into a cover just beating the pants off of the San Jose State team. Problem is it opened 35.5, and now you're laying, 38.5, which is a little tough.
Well, I'm just thinking about what I know of USC under Lincoln Riley, and those when they have those cupcake games, they take advantage. One thing about USC is they beat the teams they're supposed to beat. It's once they face, the big dogs that they really struggle.
San Jose State team total under in the first quarter.
Do you want to do this tomorrow?
Of course. I want to do everything.
Let's do a deep dive on week zero tomorrow. Follow the money coming up after this. You hear that music. Mitch Moss and Polly Howard after this. Paul Charchian going to share his best fantasy football angles. And they got the man, the myth, the legend, Derek Stevens, joining the program as well today. Stick around.